crumbling down my life, all these lies I put on a pedestal, walking around, broken down shoes, broken down vows, my same broken heart, and I know the silence is good for me.
Consequences of Falling, Part 4. Written and read by Feige. The last time Castiel sees Dean Winchester, he is sprawling across the bed with threadbare muslin drapes brushing against the warm golden curve of one arm, and crisp white sheets tangled around his thighs. He is frowning in his sleep, his face half hidden in the pillows, and Castiel has an almost irresistible urge to reach out one finger and smooth the crease that crumples his brow. He would like very much to run his hands one last time over the firm muscles of Dean's back, feel the sturdy, breakable bones, and the gentle drum of a heartbeat thrumming through his skin. He would like to lick the hollow of Dean's collarbone and taste salt. He would like very much to kiss Dean Winchester goodbye, and to say that he is sorry to break his promise so soon. He is sorry he cannot stay. But Castiel knows that if he does any of these things, Dean will probably wake up, and then everything will become very much more difficult. His path is clear. He understands the task he has been set, and in some ways it is a relief to have a purpose once again, and an honourable course. But he will miss Dean Winchester. Very much. And he does not want to die. And he knows it won't be quick. He pulls the door closed behind him with infinite care, and in one tiny, treacherous part of his heart, he is almost hoping that Dean will hear him, will wake up and come dashing out to stop him from doing what he has to do. That he has been too efficient, too silent and stealthy, and Dean sleeps on. Castiel swallows hard and pulls his borrowed shirt a little closer. It smells reassuringly like Dean, and Castiel finds a sudden hitch in his breathing, a sudden squeeze of loss that tightens his chest and makes his head hurt. He takes a deep breath, and then another, and squares his shoulders. Time to go. What you doing? Castiel jumps and stares around frantically for a moment, expecting... well, heaven only knows what he's expecting, but what he sees after a moment is Ruby. Perching on the little deck in front of the room she's sharing with Sam, breathing out a long curl of blue smoke and waving at Castiel with a hand that holds a cigarette. She takes in his expression and the smile falls off her face. What happened? Castiel blinks. This is going to be a turning point, he realizes. Either he trusts her, or he does not. She is a demon, and Castiel has known many demons over the centuries. He knows that she is probably playing games with Sam Winchester, probably trying to help Lilith, or Lucifer, or someone else again. He knows that he shouldn't trust her. But he does it anyway. And... maybe it's the memory of the dark-haired girl in the alley who gave him a $5 bill she could not easily spare herself, or maybe it's the thought of Dean standing in front of his little brother with a useless knife. Or maybe it's just the determination to prove Uriel wrong. Truthfully, Castiel doesn't know why he decides to take this leap of faith. But he would rather extend her his trust than his suspicion, would rather give her the benefit of the doubt. He prays that this is not folly, and waves her over to the cars, out of earshot of the Winchesters. I have to go, he says, when they reach her yellow car. Away. I understand what it is I have to do now. Okay, spill. Her face, half-shadowed, half-neon-lit, is serious, her manner brisk. Castiel draws a deep breath and wills himself to be calm and collected. It nearly works. Uriel found us, he says. She jerks upright, suddenly all tension, and he reproaches himself. In dreams, he came into my dream. And Dean's too, I think. Though perhaps that was only a figment of my imagination. It is a troubling thought. He has not left a note of explanation, and has assumed that Dean will know why he has gone. Lucifer is winning. There is no mistaking the terror on her face. Either she is sincere, or she is the best actor Castiel has ever seen. He hopes it is not the latter. Sam, she says, and her voice sounds raw and scraped. Yes. Uriel says that they are losing, that the seals are breaking, and Lucifer will possess Sam Winchester and walk the earth in his form. No. She sounds more desperate than hopeful, and Castiel wonders just how long she spent in the pit before she managed to claw her way out. No, agrees Castiel, because we are going to stop it. Now. I need your help. The warehouse is cold, and Castiel is glad of the trench coat, dirty and dishevelled though it is. The weight is comforting, and almost reminds him of his wings. The darkness is held at bay by flames flickering in a rusty barrel. He can't help shivering, though. The rope that binds his wrists is very tight, and his hands are growing numb. In some ways, this pose, with his shoulders pulled back and his hands tied behind the pillar, makes him feel even more vulnerable than he did in the studio in L.A., because his chest and throat are being offered up, and his back is arched, and he is painfully conscious of all the empty space behind him. He licks dry lips and closes his eyes. Meditation would probably help. He tries to find a quiet space in his soul, tries to sink down into stillness and see the rivers of his veins and the rhythm of his heart as simply small parts of a greater whole. This body is just a shell, just a leaf upon a tree. No need to feel any cringing surge of dread at the prospect of pain. No need to regret the loss of trust or tenderness. This is fated, and right, and righteous. This is an honour, and by dying like this, he will save Dean and Sam, and the dark-haired girl with the too tight shoes, and the brutal truck driver, and the little boy on the swing. He can buy them back a future. But, oh, it does sting to think of the future that he is giving up himself. Mortality is so sharp and sweet, so drenched with warmth and colour. He knows that he is less than once he was, but it still seems like, in some vital ways, his experiences, his very senses as an angel, were always muffled, always oddly numb. Angels ate of the tree of immortality, to be sure, but humans tasted of the tree of knowledge. And the juice is sweet and tart and sticky, and the seeds bitter and hot and gritty on the tongue. Now that he is human, now that he is built from bones and blood and meat, a prey to terror and desire, to laughter and appetite and sensation, truly, he understands why Gabriel wanted to remain on Earth. He could never have comprehended the seduction of the senses when he was a being of fire and air. He could never have understood selfishness or love. He gets it now, though. The urge to call out to Ruby, to say he's changed his mind, to turn tail and run back to Dean Winchester and lose himself in joy and lust and cowardice, is almost overwhelming. Almost. But not quite. Because if John and Dean Winchester could sacrifice everything for the ones they loved, then how can Castiel do less? This is his purpose, after all. This is why he was made. But he still flinches when he finally hears the footsteps. He could have asked Ruby to do it. He nearly did, in fact, because he thinks she would have said yes, and he believes that she would have been quick and clean and professional. It would have been a merciful demise. But he likes Ruby, in a puzzled and tentative fashion, and he doesn't want his blood upon her hands. If she is truly trying to find redemption, and he rather thinks she is, then Castiel very much doubts that murdering an angel would help her on the path. What he has asked of her is unpleasant enough, but Ruby is a creature of iron will and sharp edges, and she is a realist. She's no sentimental Winchester to balk at causing pain. She knows what has to be done, and has balls enough to do it, and so she has tied him here, and gone out into the darkness to find the kind of beings that they need. Not major league demons, not creatures with wit and wisdom to recognise the danger of killing an angel. Petty monsters, rather, with eyes like coal, and hearts that hunger for power and for pain. Creatures that will tear him limb from limb for the simple joy of it, and not realise their mistake until it is too late. Since the Devil's Gate opened, there has been no lack of demons such as these walking abroad at night. He did not ask her to stay, but he rather hopes she will. Now he strains to hear how many sets of feet are fast approaching, and wonders whether one of these people is secretly a friend. It would be nice, he thinks, trembling despite his best intentions, to have one friendly face there with him at the end. A witness. The footsteps grow closer. Somebody's fingers close over his bound hands, and he feels warm breath against his neck. "Hello, Angel," says an unfamiliar voice. A woman, this one, but not Ruby. "What have we got here?" And a man. Two, then, or more? They step around to face him, and he finds that there are four of them. One woman, three men, their eyes all gleaming like pitch, and their expressions far from human. "Aren't you a long way from home, pretty?" This one is inhabiting the body of an older man, somebody's grandfather, tall and white and distinguished-looking. His eyes are framed with laugh lines, and his cheeks are plump and rosy. But the smile that curves his mouth now is as cruel as anything Castiel has ever seen. He tries to stand up straight and to keep his dignity, reminds himself again that Dean Winchester endured 30 years of agony before he broke, and refuses to let Dean down. "Oh, man, this is like Christmas," says one of the others. This one, in a body that is barely out of boyhood, with a ragged straggle of wispy moustache brushing his upper lip. "Can I unwrap him? I want to see what's inside." "Slugs and snails and puppy dog's tails," sing-songs the woman, with a great guileless smile that is quite, quite mad. "That's what boys are made of. Angels, though. Blood and honey and feathers and fire, sugar and gunpowder, wriggling sticky things." She holds up a kitchen knife, and Castiel watches it twirl in the shadows, firelight sparking off its carefully honed edge. He shudders. "I want to see." She looks across at the old man. "Can I see?" "Not so fast." The last is an Asian man in a business suit, watching Castiel through glasses. The others all defer to him. Castiel bites his lip and hopes that Ruby has not made an error of judgment, has not brought back a demon smart enough to have restraint. Or, worse, that she has not betrayed him. Oh, and that would be unbearable. To fail in this attempt, to hand himself over into the demon's care and let them keep him, or kill him, at their convenience, opening up some seal and sealing the world's fate. Let this one not suspect Castiel's intent. He swallows hard and waits. The demon smiles. "We'll cut out all his secrets, love, but no need to make it quick." His dark eyes dart over Castiel's shoulder, and he tilts his head in a question. "Ladies first." "Go ahead." And that's Ruby, after all, standing quiet in the shadows. She's got his back. "I like to watch." Her voice is as cold as an Arctic winter, but her fingers find his shoulder blade and squeeze him through the coat, then drop to hold his hands. Castiel feels a surge of unexpected strength and stands a little taller. "Do your worst," he says, quietly, looking at the four demons arrayed before him. And they do. It takes Dean's eyes a moment to adjust to the shadows as he flings himself helter-skelter into the warehouse, gun held out before him. And if he'd been professional about this, if he'd had his brain in gear, he'd have grabbed a flashlight from the car and thought about strategy, rather than just hurling himself breathlessly past that stupid fucking banana-bright convertible and on to across the gravel, and then plunging out of the sunlight and into the dark. A moment later, Sam is there, and he does have a flashlight, so that's good, but Dean's heart is racing, and he's already thrown up a little in his mouth, and his tongue still stings from the acid nastiness of it. This is like Dad all over again, like Sammy, like Mom. And Dean could really start to hate the world, and God, and all his angels, for taking away everything that Dean ever learns to cherish. Every fucking thing. It's not fair. Hell, maybe Lucifer's got the right idea. The world is screwed up beyond belief, and God? God can fuck right off. What has God ever done for Dean Winchester or his family, except mess with their heads and break their hearts? Castiel? His voice is hoarse and deep, with a rasp like broken glass. He's trying to sound like the most badass motherfucker in the history of badass motherfuckers, like somebody who'd make the goddamn Batman piss his pants, but he's afraid he sounds like a scared little kid. Cass, you in here, man? The place smelled like blood and roasted pork and sulphur. Not a happy combination in Dean's extensive experience. Cass? His voice breaks, and he draws a ragged breath and steps deeper into the shadows. Boxes and empty pallets and burger wrappers. The skitter of rats in the darkness. Silence, most ominous of all. Dean's trying to look in every damn direction at once, straining his ears for a clue. And then he rounds a corner and sees Castiel. And for a moment, the world stands still. Castiel! But he knows that it's far too late. There's no human body could look like that and still have life left in it. Dean should know. There's far, far too much blood, dark and congealed around the body. Too many drunken flies wheeling and droning stupidly all around. Dean stares. His eyes have grown accustomed to the darkness, and he can make out far too many details. Somebody has tried to wrap Castiel's naked body up in the tattered trench coat, but with little success. Dean can still see more than enough. He's made those same lacerations on innocent flesh with his own hands. He knows about gouging and flaying and slicing, about shattering bones and stripping away hope, about all the ways to keep a person's body alive as long as possible. He's experienced it all firsthand, from both sides. He could have done this himself. He has done this, and worse. For a long moment, Dean cannot even breathe from the horror of it, and the guilt. And he drops his gun like a fucking amateur and doubles over where he stands. So it's Sam, not Dean, that sees Ruby coming forward holding a bloodstained knife, and Sam, not Dean, that shoots her in the head. They don't speak at all while they're digging the graves. Dean is meanly glad that Ruby's gone, but at the same time he knows that she's saved Sammy, and he cannot bring himself to hate her for that. For killing Castiel, yes, if that's what she did. But there were those four other bodies lying in the shadows, all killed with her demon-killing blade, and so Dean has to worry that maybe she was one of the good guys. Maybe she went chasing after Castiel just like them and just got there too late. Or maybe she carved his guts out and laughed while she did it. There's no way of knowing. But Sam's alive. And the hosts of heaven are apparently kicking demon ass, which should be a good result for Team Winchester, you'd think. But neither of them speaks. They are 3 interminable days older, and nearly 2 whole states away from where it happened. With no stupid yellow convertible snuggled up against the Impala in the motel parking lot, when Dean next hears the sound of Castiel's wings. It's raining when it happens, and ever afterwards Dean will find himself having inappropriate responses to thunderstorms. The motel room looks like the 70s vomited all over it. Chunky flower power wallpaper in yellow and orange and brown and white. Green and brown covers on the beds. A dusty television set, older than Sam. Amoeba-shaped coffee tables in colours that kind of hurt to look at. fluffy cream fake sheepskin rugs, even an honest-to-God lava lamp in the corner. Dean gives it 3 out of 5 because it's clean, and there's an unexpectedly modern power shower in the bathroom. Dean is sitting at a formica table, the colour of an overripe avocado, methodically cleaning his guns. "You've got to treat your weapons with respect," Dad always said. The old man might not have always been the perfect father, but he was a damn good hunter, and he knew what he was talking about. Dean finds the familiar ritual oddly comforting. The smell of the grease and the metal always takes him back to his childhood, watching John Winchester lay out his arsenal carefully on whatever clean surface was available, and patiently explaining to Dean the name and function of each part of each weapon, one after another. He likes feeling the heft of the guns, likes the sounds that they make as he snaps them open and clasps them closed, each with their own voice, their own quirks, their own characters. The room is very quiet. Sam's lying on his belly on one of the beds with his feet on the headboard, tapping away at his laptop and occasionally picking at a cool pepperoni sub swaddled in greaseproof paper. Dean finished his meal before they even reached the motel and stole Sam's fries too. Sam's still wearing that tight, closed, slightly stricken expression he's had for the past 3 days, and Dean really wishes he knew the right combination of words or gestures that could unknot the tension in the room and bring his brother back. He's tried to get the kid to snap out of it, and, okay, maybe he's not doing a great job of being the life and soul of the party right now himself, but damn, he's doing his best. He's not been moping around like some kind of teenage girl or anything. He's quickly shut down any attempt Sam has made to be sympathetic. He doesn't need to hug it out or go on Jerry Springer to share his feelings or any of that shit. It's not like Sammy losing Jessica. It's not like Dad. Except for how it really kind of is. It's not like when Sam was dead and Dean's whole universe just stopped. So, yeah, okay. Maybe he's feeling kind of numb and lost and fragile right now, but it'll pass. He's just being a pussy. He'll get over it. It's kind of embarrassing, really, that he let himself get so caught up in this thing with Castiel, because Dean knows better, damn it. He's always known better. The world doesn't work that way. Not for the Winchester men, at least. He feels vaguely stupid for having actually let himself believe that life could be different, that he could maybe have something for himself, something of his own. Something other than monsters and duty and living by Dad's rules. Like there might actually be some kind of future for him that wasn't simply a succession of cheap motels with Sammy at his side and the taste of blood in his mouth. Sam is everything he needs. And if he sometimes has let himself imagine something else, with Cassie, or with Lisa and her kid Ben, or with Castiel, well, he knows better. It doesn't help that he had this stupid, optimistic little epiphany with a guy, either. That was just the frosting on the cupcake of embarrassment. Hello, socially awkward moments. But in the end, that turned out to be the least of the problem. Dean's fine. And more important, so is Sam. And so's the world. Go team. But he still misses Castiel. Not that the guy had been human for more than 5 minutes, but, yeah, Dean misses him. A lot. And he feels guilty as hell and just plain bad for the guy. With his unexpected sweetness and his fascination with all the small stupid things about being mortal. He was just getting started, damn it. Was making his own crappy lemonade out of the fucking poison lemons he'd been handed by the big guy upstairs. And then they took the lemonade away, too. If ever anyone got a shitty deal, it was Castiel. Dean misses his curiosity and his unexpected smile. And the way he looked at Dean like Dean was something amazing and precious. He shouldn't have had to die. But a treacherous voice in the back of his head whispers, at least it wasn't Sam. And now Sam's safe from Lucifer. Now Sam's terrifying destiny has been derailed. And they can maybe start imagining a future again. And at least Castiel didn't leave it up to Dean to choose. Because in spite of the way Castiel made Dean feel, in spite of how much he... Yeah, all that. Dean would never have chosen Castiel over Sammy. Couldn't do it. And knowing that makes him hate himself a little. Because Castiel deserved something better. The guns are all clean, inside and out, gleaming and oiled and moving smooth and sweet as can be. Dean's a little startled to see he's finished them all already, and he wonders if he should start honing his knives again. Wouldn't hurt. He glances over at Sam, still frowning into his computer, and makes another stab at breaking through the ice. "So, you had any luck rustling us up a job yet, bucko?" he asks, his voice carefully cheerful. Sam blinks at him, guilty as a kid caught with a hand in the cookie jar, and Dean gives a great big shit-eating grin. "Or are you just googling up pictures of horny Japanese schoolgirls?" It's automatic now, going through the motions of being Dean, making the wisecracks and ogling the waitresses and not giving a damn. He knows that Sam doesn't buy it anymore, hasn't done for years, in fact, but he can't seem to stop. And it is who he is, just not everything he is. Some stuff is private. He kind of expects Sam to protest, but he just shakes his head. "I thought maybe I'd found a haunting, but it looks like a prank." His voice is flat, and it's killing Dean. But he just doesn't know how to fix it. He still feels like someone's hollowed out his own chest. Like he's as bright and brittle and empty as a kid's painted Easter egg, and he kind of suspects that's how Sam feels too. "Well, I guess that just goes to show the good guys are winning," he says after a moment. "Low level of demonic activity gotta mean the angels are kicking their unclean asses back to hell, right?" Sam just looks at him, and Dean's mouth feels dry. "Ah, fuck. Could you use a drink?" "I could use a drink," he says roughly, and looks around for the cooler with their beer. "Did you bring the beers?" Sam shakes his head. "Still in the back of the car," he says, looking back at the laptop. Dean nods. "I guess I could use the fresh air." He stands up, breaking a hand through his short hair and rolling his shoulders, then looks at Sam. "I'm only going to be gone 2 minutes, though, so don't go getting Sam Jr. out for some quality time with the Japanese schoolgirls or anything." "Dean!" And that sounds a bit more like Sam, that pissy tone. "Nice. I'm just saying. Keep it secret. Keep it safe." He hears Sam snort behind him as he closes the door, and it makes him smile. The evening sky overhead is the colour of a bruise, thick with dirty storm clouds promising rain. As Dean crosses the parking lot, the wind sends thin burger wrappers and discarded cigarette cartons skittering around like rats, and the air is heavy and oppressive and crackling with the static thrum of unspent lightning. There's a construction site next to the motel, and the wind that's tearing the last dead leaves from the trees is starting to whip the heavy tarpaulin like crazy, making a dark, violent sound like a giant's laundry flapping on a line, like the sails of a ghost ship. Like a massive pair of invisible wings beating just beyond the scope of human sight. Jesus, he needs to snap out of this. Sam is okay, and the world is okay, and that's all a person can reasonably ask for, damn it. He's just reached the Impala when the storm breaks, and a million big fat drops of rain come pounding down out of the sky to drench him. Dean swears and drops his keys, and wow, hello, monsoon. The tarp sounds about ready to tear the building down. And the wind is starting to scream against his ears, and shit, it's only been seconds, but his jacket is already wet through. Fuck this. His jeans have just closed over the warm metal of the car keys when he hears the unmistakable crunch of feet on the gravel behind him. And Dean's spidey senses finally kick in, and then he's pushing himself to his feet and cursing the fact that all his lovely, perfect weapons are presently lined up like good little soldiers on the green floor market table where they're doing no good to man or beast. And he spins around ready to take on whatever ghost or demon or thing that goes bump in the night might be creeping up behind him this time. And then the flood of brightness almost blinds him. Dean stumbles back, his hands raised in front of his eyes, and his car is suddenly right there to catch him, a sturdy, stable pressure against his shoulders and his ass that promises nothing can be too terrible. But his heartbeat is still racing, and every muscle in his body is taut with anticipation, adrenaline zinging through his veins. And then the brightness fades, and he finds himself face to face with an impossible figure in a trench coat. God's holy tax accountant back from the grave. There is a moment there where Dean basically forgets how to speak English and just stares at Castiel, taking in the bedhead and the old familiar suit. The open collar, the tie, the coat, which is currently, Dean knows for a fact, 6 feet under the guy's corpse, damn it, and is torn to shreds and sodden with blood and can't possibly be billowing cleanly out behind... fucking hell. And all the pristine, unbruised, unbroken skin. And there's no danger of ever mistaking this Castiel for human. Absolutely none. It's like the light that hits his skin is coming from somewhere else. Somewhere cold and clean and pure. Somewhere terrible and glorious. And there's something like a heat haze making the whole world around him look subtly wrong and insubstantial. Like the gravel and the cars and the motel are all somehow less permanent and solid, less real than the angel in their midst. Dean can hear the wings. And they sound big enough to wrap around the whole damn world. Hell, he can almost swear he can see the feathers out of the corner of his eyes, bright and trembling. And he's taking all this in, he is, but what he's actually looking at the whole time is Castiel's face. His eyes, dear heaven, his eyes, which are completely focused on Dean, with a fierce, possessive elation that just takes his breath away. "You left," says Dean, because he has never been very good at trusting people who aren't family. "You left. And they fucking killed you. You died," says Dean at last. And shit, his eyes are prickling, and his voice sounds like crap, like he's reproaching the guy. He tries again, straightening his back a little. "We found your body. We buried you." And Castiel is still just looking at him, with the ghost of a smile curving his mouth. Dean's chest feels tight, and there's a ringing in his ears, and he's on the brink of something here, like he's about to burst out laughing, or start to sob like a little kid or something. It's something huge, like the way his favourite songs build up and up into pure gold, pure awesomeness, carrying him out of himself and making his heart expand. And he doesn't know how to put this into words, doesn't have any fucking idea. "I died, and then you buried me, but now I am restored," says Castiel, and he's stepping closer, and he notices that the raindrops are actually bouncing away, not daring to touch a hair on the angel's head. He's dry as a bone, crisp and clean and warm, and Dean's hair is dripping dirty rain into his eyes, and the denim of his jacket is waterlogged, his skin slick, and the wind is biting cold against him. And Dean Winchester has never felt so fucking amazing in his whole damn life. Or at least not while he was fully dressed. "Oh," says Dean, intelligently. "Okay. Good." Castiel's smile is dazzling, and it's a damn sight more human than Dean remembers the angel ever looking before he fell. He's very close now, and Dean can smell the familiar breath of ozone and something else, something clean and sweet and fresh, like new-cut grass, but not. "I have looked on the face of God," says Castiel, watching Dean's eyes. And that's... holy... that's... what's a person supposed to say to that, for fuck's sakes? "Oh, congratulations," offers Dean, breathlessly, wondering what will happen if he tries to kiss the angel. Because he's definitely an angel again, now, crackling with power, a violence like thunder underlying his words. Definitely an angel. No question. And that's the kind of thing that probably earns a person a little quality smiting, but he's just so... fuck, he's overwhelming, is what he is, and Dean really, really wants to pull him close and taste him. Now, possibly sooner. He licks his lips and tries quite hard not to do anything stupid. Castiel can crush him like a bug, and now that he's an angel once again, it's a pretty safe bet that he's not exactly awash with hormones and naughty thoughts. Damn it. But the way he's looking at Dean, the way he's stepped right up into his personal space, those are some mixed messages right there. "So, I guess the whole death thing got you back in God's good books? That's cool?" He nods stupidly and licks his lips again, and feels Castiel watching him lick his lips, which, really, this is not doing anything to help send the message to Dean's pants that happy fun times are not on the cards. "You got a promotion." "I have been raised far higher than I ever thought to be," says Castiel slowly, and he's still smiling. Without you, I would not have been a fitting sacrifice. And he's studying Dean, like there's the secret meaning of life written on his skin somewhere, maybe hidden in the shape of his lips, or the arch of his nostrils, or the precise mix of flecks of green and gold in the colour of his eyes. I understand so many things that baffled me before, and this is thanks to you. I am not what I was. My time upon the earth has left its marks upon my soul. Well, begins Dean hoarsely, and then Castiel's hands are on him, and he's being shoved back into the cool metal and glass of his car, while the angel's mouth closes over his and the angel's body, which feels warm through the clothes, and human, and, oh, sweet, merciful Jesus, hard, cleaves to him like a second skin. It's fierce and wild and demanding, like being kissed by a thunderstorm, like being held by a tornado or a forest fire, something impossible and overwhelming. And Dean just gives himself up to it, yields himself totally, conscious of all the lethal might that's barely held in check, conscious that this being is not human, not really, and knowing that Castiel could break him with a thought, but trusting that he won't. You know that you belong to me, whispers Castiel against the skin of his throat, and Dean shudders helplessly under his hands. I will not let you go. This is Jesus, he doesn't have words. And pretty soon he also doesn't have clothes, which is a neat trick. And oh, fuck, hello, naked angel in the rain. Even in the middle of it all, with his brain cells spontaneously combusting, and his skin feeling like it's actually a fire with sensation, Jesus, even in the middle of all of this, Dean still finds himself snorting with laughter against Castiel's collarbone. Dude, we are naked in the middle of a parking lot, next to a highway, and we're going to do the horizontal tango. Oh, well, vertical tango or something. Seriously? Discretion really not so much part of your skill set, is it? Castiel looks at him with such affection that it makes Dean's toes curl. I did not take you for a prude, he says, and kisses Dean hard enough to make him forget his name. My wings hide us from mortal eyes, he adds a little later. And, to be honest, by that point, Dean would be more than happy to do this in the window of Macy's, or live on TV at the start of the Super Bowl, because nothing, absolutely nothing, has ever felt as shockingly good as this does. Castiel owns him, heart, mind, body, and soul. When he pushes open the door of the motel again, sometime later, Dean's whole body is one glorious, satisfied, tingling ache. He looks across at Sam, and he knows he's got the world's dopiest smile on his face, and he can't help it. He loves Sam. He loves everybody. Life is, as it turns out, pretty fucking awesome. Sam looks up and frowns. Did you make a run to the liquor store? He asks. You were gone a long time. Dean rubs his wet hair and sits down on the edge of the bed and, yep, still smiling like an idiot. No, he says. Sam pulls a face. You forgot the beer, he says. Dean, are you okay? Dean nods and laughs. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm very okay. In fact, the only thing that could make me more okay right now is a warm piece of cherry pie fresh from the oven. Okay, says Sam, closing the laptop and pulling himself into a sitting position. Seriously, dude, you're worrying me. Dean nods and swallows. So, good news, he says, and then sniffs the air and pauses. Wait a minute, is that... And when he turns around, he sees a thoroughly impossible pie sitting amidst his neatly ordered weapons, with steam curling out of the holes in its golden crust. Coda. It's snowing when Sam hears a knock on the door and assumes that Dean's forgotten his damn keys again. He crosses the room in two swift strides and pulls the door open, ready to say something cutting, and then stops short at the sight of a stranger on the threshold. Can I help you? He asks, wondering if she has the wrong room. She's strikingly pretty, a tall woman, about Sam's age, or maybe a touch older, and she's got the build of a runner. Very dark skin, beautiful eyes, short hair. She's wearing a long red leather coat over black jeans and a tight cream sweater, and Sam can't help noticing that the overall effect is very good indeed. He smiles tentatively. She looks at him for a long moment with an unreadable expression, and then punches him in the face. Sam reels back, clutching his nose. What? He splutters, and starts to reach for his gun, and then she's standing in front of him with her hands on her hips, glaring. So, we have some trust issues, she says, and it's something about her posture, or maybe her intonation, but he gets it then, and stands up straight, feeling a sudden surge of hope. Ruby?
Give the boy a gold star, she says, still glaring.
You hit me, he says, because, crap, he thinks his nose might actually be broken here.
You shot me in the fucking head, she points out, grimly, and he can't argue with that one.
Sorry, he says, and, man, he really means it. When Dean had relayed him Castiel's side of the story, Sam had had to go and throw up. He's been hoping she'll come back, and holding on to the thought that it was just a regular gunshot, not a bullet from the Colt or any other kind of mojo. Been hoping he'll get another chance.
Yeah, well, you better be, she says. And she's still pissed, but hey, she's here.
And before you ask, no, I'm not joyriding, coma victim, only one previous owner, and I moved in when she vacated the premises. She gives him a very level look. I have the paperwork, or you could, you know, try trusting me.
Okay, says Sam, carefully. And shit, his nose is killing him, but he's not an idiot. And he doesn't want to fuck this up.
Okay. I really am sorry.
Keep saying it, Sam, she says. But he can see something like a smile in her eyes.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. Out. Yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home,
when I come home,
oh, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's growing over you.